Welcome to the Cloisters. Welcome to the Cloisters Lounge. Welcome to the Cloisters Lounge. Come on in and sit on down. Listen as we break it down. From hymns above to songs anew, sharing the things important to you. Come on in and sit on down. Listen as we break it down.
Hello, family, and welcome to another episode of the Choristers Lounge. Thank you all again for tuning in to the lounge on whatever channel and medium that you're doing that on. Just thank you all for continuing to be part of the journey. Always want to encourage you all to continue to subscribe to our main channel on YouTube. In this wonderful season two, we're glad to have expanded to other platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcast, and still having a growing presence on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok. So however and wherever you are attaching yourself to the Choristers Lounge, we just ask that you continue to be part of the journey. And if you know somebody that has not been part of the journey, just encourage them to like, share, subscribe to the various mediums that we have. So today, we are pleased to welcome in St. Jessica Legree, and she is going to take us on a journey focused on this concept of music therapy. So St. Jessica, so good to have you, and welcome to the Choristers Lounge.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely, absolutely. So before we get started, if you wouldn't mind, and occasionally I do this with our guests that come into the lounge, just give us a little bit of your educational background, kind of how it is that you landed in the music therapy world. Again, it's not brag, it's a fact. I understand that you have recently received your master's in music therapy. So I don't want to get it wrong. So I just kind of want to make sure that I kind of give you the space to give us your kind of educational resume, so to speak. So just kind of take us through your educational journey and kind of how you landed at that master's degree in music therapy.
Sure. So my musical educational background, I can say, started back in sixth grade. That's when I first picked up the flute, and I fell in love with it from there. My childhood dream was to be a member of the Florida A&M University marching band.
Yeah.
So I was working towards that goal.
Okay.
And to tie it into the church, we were learning a song in the choir, Know Ye the Story. And because I was just learning to play the flute, I was like, I wonder if I can just play the melody on my flute. Haphazardly started playing that. That got me into scoring music, and I continued throughout my middle school, high school career, and then I went on to Florida A&M, and I did join the band.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
So I received my undergraduate degree in music education, but that is not an area that I wanted to pursue. I never wanted to be a teacher.
Okay. All right.
But I knew it had to be something in music, but I wasn't sure the route that I would take per se. And at the time, only education and performance were the options in music at that particular school. So took the education route, but I did some introspection and found music therapy later on, several years after I graduated. And I got into that master's program at Loyola University in New Orleans. And that's pretty much my whole journey. I want to say that my journey into music therapy was a therapy experience in itself, but that's where we are now. So awesome. That's how I became a music therapist.
That's great. So some folks know this, some folks don't know this, that music therapy was actually my first major in college. I did not, I'll say I did not prepare myself for the rigors of what's required for a music therapy major. So I only lasted a semester. It was not pretty. So, you know, somebody that was actually able to go through that entire journey, I have immense respect for, because I know just a little bit of what's required within that music therapy world. So just generally speaking, how would you kind of describe or explain music therapy to a layperson who may just be hearing that term for the first time?
So I'll give you two definitions. One comes from the American Music Therapy Association. So this is like the definition of it. And that is just the clinical and evidence-based use of music interventions to accomplish individualized goals within a therapeutic relationship between the therapist and the client. And that's by a credentialed professional who has completed a music therapy program, an approved music therapy program. So just in layman's terms, that it's simply saying it's the scientific application of music to achieve those goals. It informs and is informed by research and theories, and it assists clients in achieving their wellness goals, be it physical, emotional, spiritual, whatever, all those domains of being.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you talk about kind of clients. So is this medically based? Like, how do you describe, like, when are we looking at music from a clinical type standpoint? So when you talk about clients, who specifically can benefit from, you know, music therapy, or how are those clients found, things along those lines?
So music is accessible to everyone. So I feel that it's anyone can benefit from music therapy. When I'm coming from a rehabilitation background, that's why I'm used to saying clients, but some people say members, students, because it can be in any particular setting. So however that setting chooses to address the people that they're working with is what I'm referring to.
Gotcha. So in a general sense, how does music affect, like, the mind, the body, the soul? You know, how are you seeing that kind of from your vantage point?
So I want to go back to the brain, because that's where all of our processing is done. There are neurons that are sent through the brain. It's that they send and receive signals, and that's how we are able to process information. So music has the ability to affect both the left and right hemispheres of the brain simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the only mediums that has that ability. So the left side of the brain is the logical side. So that's your speaking, reading, writing, listening, reasoning, sequential thinking, time awareness, all those things. And the left side is what controls the right side of the body. Now, the right side of the brain, that's your creative, I would say, your creative space. So that's responsible for spatial awareness, intuition, understanding language, as opposed to like written and speaking, imagination, facial recognition, and that controls the left side of the body. Okay. So injuries to either side of the brain is going to affect the opposite side of the body. Now, when you talk about music that has a bilateral application, meaning you're using both sides of the brain, then it has the ability, the brain is very powerful. And there's a term called neuroplasticity.
Neuroplasticity.
Yes.
N-E-U-R-O-P-L-A-S-T-I-C-I-T-Y?
There you go.
Oh, I can spell. Go ahead. I wrote it down. All right. Yes, ma'am. What is neuroplasticity?
Neuroplasticity. All right. So this creates, it's the brain's ability to create new neural pathways.
Okay.
So where the language center of the brain is on the left side, the left hemisphere. When you use music, if there's some type of injury to the left side of the brain and you apply music to that, it's able to bypass that language center to create a new neural pathway so that the language is still accessible to that individual. So neuroplasticity is the brain's innate ability to rewire itself, in essence.
Okay. So my wheels are turning in the sense that, you know, I really want to kind of get your thought on kind of how, if at all, music therapy has a place within the mind of a chorister. So we'll get to that in a moment. But you mentioned earlier the phrase health and wellness. And those of you that have been, you know, part of our journey here in the Choristers Lounge, we know that health and wellness, you know, vocal health and wellness is something that we've talked about. But just from a broader sense, is what you're talking about from a health and wellness standpoint. What research, what from a clinical standpoint are you seeing in terms of music's ability to help with healing, moods, emotions? How has that all kind of come into the space that you're coming from in music therapy?
So, as I said before, the music stimulates various parts of the brain simultaneously, but it's not usually known what those areas of the brain are. So, just to give you an overview, now, I'm not a medical professional, so don't quote me on all of you.
Gotcha. Understood. But you do have that master's degree. So listen, you got credentials. Carry on.
Yes, all right. So music and all sound in general activates the auditory cortex of the brain, which is in the temporal lobe.
Okay.
This is the area that perceives sound. Mm-hmm. You have rhythm, which stimulates motor neurons in the spine, the vasal ganglia, the cerebellum, and melody, which has more right hemisphere dominance, musical syntax, harmony, and chord sequences have been found to activate, key language areas in the left hemisphere, such as like the Broca's area or Wernicke's area. And harmony, major and minor tonalities activates, as I said before, like bilaterally. So affecting both sides of the brain within the thalamus. And then minor music has the ability to activate additional areas in the brain, such as the amygdala, the brainstem, which is huge in as far as breathing and like respiratory rate, and then the cerebellum as well. So you see how, from a biology framework, you understand the functions of the brain, but how those tie into music and what areas are being stimulated and how. And that's really what the music therapy has helped me understand, is how those areas, how those elements of music are affected in the body. So, I don't know if that answers your question.
No. That actually kind of goes right back into, or segues perfectly kind of into, you know, so now looking at it, kind of bringing it back into our congregation from the perspective of, you know, a chorister, from the reality of what it is that we do as choristers. Now, I know that you, while you're not a chorister, I know you have some directing. What would I say? You've had some directing experience. I'll put it that way. So, from that standpoint, do you see a connection in terms of how choristers are kind of responsible for selecting the right song? Within the right song, selecting the right tempo for a particular song for a particular moment, does that relate in any way to music therapy in any sense? What would you say about that? Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
So you have an option in music therapy to use live music or recorded music.
Okay. It's,
they lean more towards live music because as a musician first, we have the ability, we know all the elements of music. Mm-hmm. So in using that music to help a client, you're able to manipulate those elements of music to benefit them. Mm-hmm. So if someone is, their heart rate is up and you're trying to lower it, you might start where they are as far as tempo or how loud or soft it is.
Yeah.
And you can bring them down with the music. And that's a term we call the ISO principle. So ISO meaning same. So you start where they are.
Yeah.
Bring them down or you can bring them up. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I liken that to, we say all the time how music moves me.
Yes,
how is it moving you?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That, I guess that's one example of you take the music from where you are and move you to where you need to be.
Gotcha.
So absolutely. Coursers have that ability to see what's happening within the service or anytime and can direct the path of where the spirit wants to take you.
I love what you just said there. It's about awareness of the moment, right?
Yeah.
And being able to meet that moment, understand what the moment requires, mm-hmm. And then select music from all, you know, vantage points that meet the moment to kind of take it to the next piece of the service. So I absolutely love that. Now, of course, within our congregation, within Church of God Saints of Christ, our music is performed a cappella. Is there mm-hmm. anything specific relative to a cappella music in the music therapy world that you make? I certainly love what you mentioned about, you know, live music, you know, versus recording music and kind of the difference between the two. Is there any research that you've seen relative to, you know, a cappella music in particular?
So there hasn't been much research that I could find related to a cappella music in terms mm-hmm. of music therapy.
Okay.
But there is information as it relates to singing collectively.
Okay.
And I will say this as far as a cappella singing, it's more intimate because mm-hmm. you are lacking that accompaniment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you are exposing the most human aspects of music, which is the vocal timbre, the emotion, and the breath. Mm-hmm. And to do that collectively, that's just, I guess it's room for a heightened experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's a practice called toning. And I would say that we do that within the anthem. So right at the beginning of our service, we're starting with this ancient practice, just with the humming that we do at the end of the song. So mm-hmm. it's a sound healing technique that involves producing an extended vowel sound to create deep vibrations in the body, in the mind. And it just promotes relaxation, emotional release, a sense of inner harmony just from doing that. But we're doing that collectively. And we are linked up mm-hmm. with our, you know, with our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So not just in voice, but also physically. We're grounding ourselves right at the beginning of our service.
Thank you.
There's something called mudras, and I don't know if it's a yoga practice or I'm not sure, but they are hand symbols that are supposed to, I guess, summon certain energies, frequencies, and whatnot. And I would say that that is a part of what we do when we link up for our love or when we raise our hands for prayer. We are creating certain shapes with those practices. I think that can use a little bit more exploration, but I definitely feel with the whole plan of salvation, there's something to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel you may have a doctoral, I don't know what they call it, but maybe you want to, you know, use the music of the Church of God, Saints of Christ to maybe do a little bit more study on the acapella, especially since that's just, because I feel like there's something there. And absolutely that's, and this is again, you know, how we know, you know, that we haven't, you know, we don't often make mention of this person, but we should a little bit more here in the course. That's how we know that what was given the prophet William Saunders Crowdy was divinely given, even in the musical realm.
Absolutely.
All of this stuff in the Courses Lounge starts with what God downloaded to Prophet William Saunders Crowdy. Just what you made mention of right there is absolutely beautiful. Something I had never, you know, thought about in that way. So when it comes to just, you know, we talk about that toning and kind of that grounding, that sound healing technique, is there any research relative to, and this isn't me being funny, YouTube audience, I'm really going to ask a question, any specific type of sense, is there a difference in the healing aspect of an ooh or an ah, or the, like, kind of the different vowel sounds, or do they all kind of hold the same type of kind of grounding?
No, that's a great question, and they do hold different meanings. If you think about the seven chakras,
come on now.
One has a different
come on now. Yes,
each one has a different vowel sounds associated with it. So I don't know
them. That's all
right off the top of my head.
You just gotta bring it back.
We gotta bring it back.
Starting
from the root chakra and going all the way to the crown, they each one has a different vowel sound associated with it as you move up.
Okay. All right. Yes. We're gonna have to come back to that one. So is there anything else that we didn't touch about when you're specific to the music therapy world that you think might be good for, you know, our audience to learn? I mean, I'm learning so much. I'm kicking myself that I didn't continue my music. So from a professional standpoint, St. Jess, I actually work with a hospice company. And part of the hospice team is a complimentary service, complement to C-O-M-P-L-E. Complimentary. So if needed, we do have a music therapist that's part of that team. So of course, you know, hospice is for patients that are kind of in that end of life space. So it kind of was amazing when I started this job 2 years ago, kind of come full circle from what I started in my college, you know, realm, music therapy, kind of being able to see a music therapist at work in that particular space. It's like, wow, that's something else. So I see exactly what you're talking about just in terms of kind of the healing, soothing nature of music therapy in that particular space. But is there anything else specific to music therapy that we haven't touched on that you think might be good for the audience to hear?
I have a couple of points.
Yes, ma'am.
There was a book that I found. It's called Sacred Sounds.
Okay.
Transformation Through Music and Word. So it was, I honestly don't have the book, but I found a little, I need it.
Sure.
There was a point that was made in terms of resonance. And this goes back to what I was saying with I love.
Yeah.
And I guess it can go along with acapella singing.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of resonance, it's most easily demonstrated if you think of a tuning fork and striking a tuning fork near a piano.
Okay.
So if we were to strike that, and it's the tuning fork is key to the tone of middle C, then if you look at the piano, like raise the lid on the piano and look at the strings that are in there, you will notice that the middle C on the piano is also vibrating because they were the tuning fork being tuned to middle C triggered a response in the piano because they were vibrating on the same frequency.
Okay.
So when you have a collective worship experience and we are all in tune with that spirit, when the ark is open, we're standing, we're giving reverence to God, and we're all on that same frequency, there is power, there is an ability to evoke the spirit or and just invite it in to give vent to the spirit.
Yes.
And that's why we're still able to have an individual experience, even though we're collectively worshiping.
Yes. Yes.
Also three elements, rhythm affects changes in physical states. Melody affects changes in emotional and mental states. And then harmony is capable of lifting consciousness to spiritual awareness. And you need all three of those elements in order to achieve unity of mind, body, and spirit. We do all of those things in our congregation. And we have all of those things. So somebody who may be in pain, we often hear that the spirit quickens the flesh.
Yes.
If we listen to the music, somebody might be jamming to the beat.
Yeah, yeah.
And not in pain anymore. Mm-hmm. Don't even realize what happened. But somebody else who might be emotionally going through something, they're just sitting there, eyes closed, and they're swaying to the melody. They're listening to the lyrics because it taps into something else within them.
Yes.
That frequency that's within them. And then I will say every cell in our body is a resonator. So it has the capability of responding to any other sound outside of the body. And every organ, how can I say this? Every organ in which the cells of light vibration have gathered to form that particular organ will respond as a group to particular sound vibrations.
Okay.
So I'm thinking about a lot of the sayings that we have in the church where you might hear the Sabbath was great. You don't have the words to really express it, but all you can say, it was better felt than told.
Better felt than told. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Because
because
there's something within you that can feel it that you just cannot express. There, the transmission of a resonant vibration requires three things. There must be an original vibrating energy source.
Okay.
Two, there must be a transmitting medium.
Okay.
And three, there must be a receiver of the vibration. So something which will receive and respond to the energy or sound of the vibration being sent. So I think this is just my interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
That can be one of two things. The original vibrating energy source. That's God.
Come on now. Yes, 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 yes.
The transmitting medium. I would say that's the courser.
Okay.
And then the receiver of that vibration is the choir.
Come on now. Yes.
But that could also be the congregation.
Yes.
Now, the second one, the original vibrating energy source, I feel could be the composer or the song itself. Again, the transmitting medium can be the choir,
yes,
including the courser, then the receiver of that vibration is the congregation.
Lord have mercy. Yes.
So there are vibrations. The ear can pick up vibrations between 16 to 2,000 vibrations per second.
Okay.
The body can still feel pulsations within that are not heard.
Okay.
So that goes back to that point of better felt than told, because you couldn't hear it, but your body still felt what was happening.
Yes, yes.
But that's it. That's all I have.
Okay, yeah, this conversation must continue, because I think there are so many other things that we can kind of explore, you know, within this particular lens. So I just thank you for just opening up, you know, the possibilities here. So kind of as we get to the point of kind of wrapping things up, I kind of bring it back to our staple questions here in the Chorister's Lounge. Even though you're not a chorister, I still like to ask the question, when, where, and by whom? So take us back to your appointment into the choir. When, where, and by whom, to the best of your knowledge, were you appointed to the choir? As best you can think. I know I just put you on the spot with this one.
As far as getting into the choir, I don't think I was ever like appointed, mm-hmm. coming from a smaller tabernacle.
Sure.
I just got in.
Just got in. And where is your local tabernacle?
Jacksonville, Florida.
Jacksonville, Florida. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I want to say I was about 9 or 10 when I first got into the choir. Mm-hmm. I sat on the soprano side because that's where my sister was.
Yes. And your sister,
I didn't
want
to be left alone.
Just for the sake of the record, St. Jennifer LeGrue. Amen. Yes. Amen. Yes, yes, yes.
As I got older and my voice matured, I switched.
Yes.
And began sitting on the alto side.
Oh, you switched yourself.
I did.
It happens. That's what happens. That's common practice nowadays. It's all right. And then the other thing that I wanted to ask you about is, how did you get involved with the Kagasak Orchestra?
Okay, so as I said early on, when I first started playing the flute, I remember Brother Richie mm-hmm. started the orchestra, and I was just learning at that point, mm-hmm. and I joined one of his, mm-hmm. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, but then it didn't happen for a long, long while. But once I got into my musical career, mm-hmm. I figured that there was some others coming up under me mm-hmm. who began playing instruments. And I was like, because I enjoyed it so much, I was like, we got to keep this going, keep the mm-hmm. talent, mm-hmm. you know, allow the kids to showcase what they have learned and bring yes. it back to the church. That's what we do.
Yes.
So yes. I just had the idea to bring it back. Mm-hmm. And with the knowledge that I had gained in my undergraduate studies, as far as conducting or scoring, I didn't really take an arranging class, but just from reading music, I was able to use that knowledge to continue to score some of our songs and just present that to the congregation.
Yeah, we're going to come back to, so I still believe that there is a space for that. So I'm interested to see what becomes of the Kagasak Orchestra in the days to come. Yeah, you know, you of course know that, you know, Brother Richie Hurd is a contributor to this wonderful podcast. So we might have to get you
Absolutely.
All back on together and maybe just, you know, throw around some ideas amongst the two of you. But that was certainly, you know, that orchestra has, you know, brought many wonderful performances to the congregation over the years. And I, like I said, I still think there's a space for that. And like you said, an opportunity for our youth that are studying music to be able to showcase in that way. Of course, you know, like I said, our primary medium, you know, for our music is our voice. But still, you know, that instrumental component carries with it a certain spirit as well. And it's just interesting to see that connection between, you know, those compositions that were composed, you know, for the voice to be transposed into instrument. The spirit is still there. Even in those type of performances. So, you know, I personally just thank you for taking that on and looking forward to what the future may hold with that. But I have certainly enjoyed this time with you, St. Jessica, and I don't know if I can be so forward. I'm going to start calling you doctor. because I see more ahead of you in terms of this music therapy space, and like specifically, you know, how the congregation can even be part of that doctoral journey, I'll say. So just thank you for taking the time with us here in the lounge. Did you want to have any final words for the audience before we bid adieu to you this afternoon?
The only thing I will say, as far as the choristers and singers are concerned, is to study your craft. There is a lot more to what the prophet brought. And as we open our awareness to what that is, we can only go up from here.
All right, Lounge family. So before we let St. Jess go, we're going to do a version of Song Association, just real quick. Most music therapists that I know of, actually, when I kind of took music therapy for that one semester, I did have to take a guitar course. And we saw that St. Jess has had a guitar handy in the background. So it's going to kind of open it up to St. Jess so she can give us a little bit of a performance on that guitar. So I understand that you're going to be possibly doing Summertime. Is that correct, St. Jess? So I'll turn it over to you for that performance. Floor is yours.
All right. Summertime, and the living is easy. Fish are jumping, and the cotton is high. Your daddy's rich, and your mama's good-looking. So hush, little baby, don't you cry. One of these mornings, you'll arise up free. Then you'll spread your wings, and you'll take to the sky. But till that morning, there's nothing can harm you. With daddy and mommy standing by.
Good old Lord have. That was great. I can see why you moved yourself to the alto side. That good old Summertime from that classic Porgy and Bess. Lounge family, we're going to bring this episode to a close. So again, thank you for spending a little time with us here in the lounge. Like I said at the beginning, just continue to subscribe to the various mediums that we have, the YouTube channel, the various podcast streams, whether it's on Spotify, Apple Music, various social media mediums, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram. Again, just thank you for continuing to be part of the journey, sharing the good news, glad tidings. Let somebody know of the great work that we're doing here in the Choristers Lounge. We're off and running with a great start to season 2. And we're looking forward to welcoming you again the next time the Choristers Lounge opens its doors. God bless and keep you is my prayer.
Thank you for joining us on the Choristers Lounge.
Important to you. Come on in and sit on down. Listen as we break it down.